listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio, LA's new API dealer. And now from the Nowcast Network studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here on my right, I have Martin Gage.
How you doing, Mike?
Doing good. Scott Gershon.
Hey, now.
And Rob Arbiter.
Hello there.
And today we have a long-lost son who's come back. Andrew Sheps is with us today.
All right. Just doing my Carl Pilkington.
Andrew, welcome back. As a matter of fact, you know, somebody sent us an email. I wish I remember what this guy's name was. But he said, yeah, my favorite show was the one that Andrew was on. I'm like, great, we've done like 17 shows. His favorite is the one that Andrew is on. Anyhow. Welcome back, Andrew.
Thanks.
What have you been up to? Why don't you give us
some working. Just working on a bunch of records. Been actually really lucky working on a Linkin Park record.
Oh, that's great.
Did some U2 over at Abbey Road in Studio 2, which was amazing.
Oh, my gosh. How was that?
It was pretty incredible. Pretty incredible. You walk in, and it's all the Beatles albums.
Wow. Yeah. That's amazing.
And then you brought your Pro Tools system in?
Yeah. But we did actually bring back a couple of the old consoles. We had one of the TG consoles from the Abbey Road album and the Neve from Wish You Were Here.
Wow.
It was great. And then they say, well, you know, what microphone do you want to use on that? I said, well, I want to use the John Lennon vocal mic on that. They go, okay. I'll go grab it.
What mic was that?
A 47.
Wow.
But it's the specific one.
Right, too. Right.
You know, it's all by serial number. It's crazy.
That's amazing. How big is their mic locker? I mean, it must be huge.
Oh, it's huge. It's huge.
Is it ridiculous? Is it the kind of mic locker where you walk in and they have like, you know, this is a mic that was only made for 4 years in like, you know, Uzbekistan? And
there's a little bit of that. Not with the microphones, more with the outboard gear because EMI built so much of their own stuff. So, and there's a book called Recording the Beatles. Is that the name of it?
Right.
This huge book that they just put out in conjunction with Abbey Road and all of the engineers except Jeff Emerick basically talked to them for this book. And you go through the book and there are these crazy looking passive EQs that are the size of a house. And you go, hey, where's that? And they go, oh, we got that down the hall. You want that? So you page through this book and everything you see in the book is still there somewhere.
Wow.
And they just go grab it.
We were talking with a gentleman from used to work at Capitol Studios on one of our podcasts, and we were talking about just having that aura of just all the great people that have been there. I bet over at Abbey Road, it was incredible.
It's amazing. Well, and also especially in Studio 2, because if you see pictures of the Beatles recording, there aren't that many pictures, but the microphones are always pretty far away from whatever they're recording, so you get a lot of the sound of the room. So just walking into the live room and you hear it coming back in your ears. It just sounds like Revolver and it sounds like Meet the Beatles. And the ambience is that room for most of the album. And the chamber, which is also right next door and still exactly the same. So
the rooms itself, have they made a lot of...
touched it.
Really?
Haven't touched it at all.
Wow.
It's gross
still
and
still
dusty.
Got the white fiberboard.
Yeah,
and
exactly. And the big white drapes coming down from the top and the walls that swing out.
What was the name of the plugin that you just bought?
I think it was just what he mentioned, actually.
The Abbey Road plugin?
Yeah, there's an EMI Abbey Road plugin, which we just put in
TG.
My studio. TG compressor. And, it's, you know, I think it's based on exactly that, that made by EMI. That's the one you helped me put in, Mike, recently.
Right.
Yeah, pretty aggressive, but it's great. Yeah.
Did you get to use the real thing?
Yeah, well, that's actually a plug-in of the Chandler reissue,
which is
in conjunction with EMI. But there are a bunch of just old, weird EMI things. That they don't even know what they are. They just have numbers.
On the software box, it's just got a picture of the Abbey Road, the actual road,
right.
You know, with the zebra crossing.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as I saw that, I bought it. I didn't care what was in it. I just bought it.
Did you walk across the crosswalk?
I did.
And get the picture?
No, I didn't get a picture.
Did you wear shoes or no shoes?
I was wearing shoes.
Okay.
It was a little chilly.
And what were you there for? You're working on...
With U2, they just did that song with Green Day that came out for reopening the Superdome, and then also one other new song that's on their Greatest Hits compilation they just
The single is one, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, 18 singles, I think it's called.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's great. How was it working with them?
They're great. It's amazing. It's the hardest I've ever worked in my life, and it was unbelievably great.
Was it hard because you just felt like you had to be on your game at just total running on 11 the whole time?
Yeah, I couldn't slack off the way I usually do. No, it's just they just play all the time when they're there. So they come in, and you're in record, and you're in record for 12 hours, and then they leave, and then you go through and figure out what you've recorded for the last 12 hours, and then they show up again. So it's just
so it's sleep's amazing. Not an option. It was like
not a whole lot, not a whole lot.
Like 20-hour days, 4 hours of sleeping in the
something
corner.
Something like that.
Wow.
Yeah, but it was great.
What a great experience. That is amazing. Which, you know, we'll have to think about that because on the second part of the show, we're going to be doing viewer requests and a lot of listener requests and have a lot of questions that listeners have emailed us, and one of them is talking about working with clients, and they want to know not our best experiences, but the worst experiences with working with clients. So, guys, just file that away.
Actually, I do have a quick question. When working and trying to capture the moment of what they're trying to create, and with all this really interesting vintage gear around, do you find that you can only use the gear in a post-recording process? Or were they kind of keen to, hey, let's slap that new compressor kind of box on what I'm doing now and see what it sounds like?
Well, I mean, the recording's pretty straight ahead. It's just using the old mics and these old consoles to record through.
Right.
So not a whole lot of heavy process. I mean, not like the Beatles records, especially Revolver or Sgt. Pepper's, where everything's heavily processed to tape. But that's more a function of how things were done then because of the lack of tracks. And you had to commit to things as you went because you were combining stuff as you went. So we're multi-tracking. So there was a lot of using the old mics. And, I mean, we even got setup sheets from Beatles sessions to figure out where to put the drums and where we should put this and the other things so that would be authentic. Because if you're in the room, you might as well go for it.
Did you have a Q clone with you?
No.
Oh.
No. There wasn't time.
And as Mike said, was it Pro Tools session, not any analog?
Yeah, we were originally going to go to tape, and I'm glad we didn't. I mean, they work on Radar a lot, which I'm not that familiar with, but I can't imagine getting through it on something as inflexible as tape because there's just so much that changes as you go, where the whole band will want to change the chorus but keep all the verses, but they have 12 different ideas for the choruses. There just isn't time to do it on tape.
Yeah. So there's still analog machines in the rooms?
They're all in the hallways.
Oh, are they?
The hallways are just packed with machines.
Studers?
Yeah, there were some Studers. They've got 3348s just as door stops.
Any Stevens machines? Or?
Probably, but I didn't get to see all the analog machines.
Right.
I mean, they're literally stacked one or two deep in all the hallways as you go past to the point where you stop looking.
Yeah.
You don't even notice them after a minute.
Well, it's good to have you back, and it sounds like you had a really – just a great adventure out there.
Thanks, Mike. I appreciate that. Sorry, man. That's the first time I've spoken.
Yeah, Martin, it's good to have you back because I know you were sleeping for the last 6 minutes. But hey, my question is, did you see any gear that you just wanted to try out even though you had no idea what it did? Just like
– Oh, yeah. I mean, in particular, this one passive EQ that was about 2.5 feet tall and about a foot wide with a bunch of knobs, not all of which are labeled.
Wow.
So, and it was cool. I mean, nothing amazing, but yeah, there's just stuff laying around everywhere.
You know, that's probably so that people come in there paying their rate. They just look at this stuff and they, you know, spend more time trying to figure out some of this stuff. So
I wonder if you could actually bring to market a plug-in emulation of that box, since no one knows what it does anyway.
Well,
it could just be the Abbey Road mystery box, and no one knows what the plugin does.
Well,
either.
they knew what it did.
Someone knew what it did.
Yeah, it was just a design that, like, really? And that's why there are only one. I think there are two of them. One of them they made that fit in a rack, and another that was way too big and weighed about 45 pounds.
And it's passive.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. 45 pounds of what?
Just wire. And a lot of metal.
Wow.
Wow.
And it's passive. So by the time the signal like makes it all the way through, it's like gasping for breath at the other side.
No, no, not at all.
You see, but that's one of the most amazing things about Abbey Road is EMI. I mean, they were one of the few studios in the 60s that were just building stuff on the spot. I mean, you know, other studios were taking, you know, a lot of corporate gear, but EMI, you went in there and there were guys in white coats in the back making things. And then they'd just drag them in and say, let's try it. I mean, that was what was special about Abbey Road. And EMI in particular, they had a record label, but in the 60s, they were also, you know, manufacturers. That's what they were known for.
Well, I would imagine with, you know, working with a group like the Beatles, you just have to always be on the cutting edge.
Well, they were like that even before. I mean, even with outside gear that would come in, their technicians would get it for months before they would allow the engineers to use it. And they would bring it into the shop and they'd take it apart, reverse engineer it, decide if they thought it would be okay, maybe change things, and then say, oh, by the way, we got this compressor. You guys, like LA-2As and 1176s would months. And I'm sure it killed them when they finally had to buy a Neve console because they'd been building them all themselves forever.
Yeah. I mean, the dress code right up, you know, until 66, you had to wear a white coat to be in the studio.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you wore a white coat. I believe I'm right in saying this because I was reading the Jeff Emmerich book. It was white coats were the engineers. And the other guys that were sort of technicians that were, you know, walking in the hallways and providing, bringing in gear, they wore gray coats. And you could get, you know, fired or sacked if you took your white coat off. It was a serious, you know, big deal. You had to be, you know, a technician, and you had to wear your coat. That's when the Beatles were recording. You can see some of the photographs that when Jeff Emmerich and some of the guys were revolutionaries and took their white coats off, and it was like they were the rebels, and they had to accept it in the end. You know, it was a big deal to take your white coat off.
Study next week. We're going to get coats.
Yeah.
Let's just say we've got them now.
That's right. Well, before we get going, I want to take care of a little business, and one is, as you know, we are giving away Rob's DMP7s.
Woo-hoo.
And we're going to give another one away right now.
How many have you got, Rob? How many have you got? You've been giving tons away.
Well, no, there's three total.
Oh, okay.
But it feels like about 10, but there's only three.
Yeah, and I don't give them away every week.
When you give them away, do they come back or something? Because you keep giving them away.
The same ones.
Yeah, we do.
This will be number two, though.
This will be number two. Emphasis on giving them away. But I got this email, and it's from Wes Kawaha. And it was really kind of quick and simple. It's subject, I want Rob's DMP7. In the body, it says, because I am a gear slut, and without it, I will surely die.
Fair enough.
Seriously,
Wes. Which
may
be the reason I bought it originally.
Save a life, give it to DMP7.
So, Wes, just email me your information because I don't want to have that death on my hands. So I'm going to give you – actually, Rob's going to give you one of his DMP7s.
I will give you one of my DMP7s. I'm not sure, but I think – of the two remaining, one is a tabletop unit and one is a rack mount. So tell me which one you want.
Well, you've got, you know, David already spoke for his.
Right, he spoke for a tabletop.
Yeah, so, and we will give him his.
That's David now.
Yeah. He's an eager beaver.
He is
and
called.
A really expert listener to the podcast.
See, it hasn't gone out yet.
Yeah, that's good.
So, I just want to tell everybody, also, we are on our MySpace page, we're going to start listing free gear that we're going to be giving away. So the next thing that's coming down the pipe on the next podcast is going to be a Roland drum machine that I am giving away. It's an older one.
707?
No.
Not a classic drum.
No, believe me.
No. No, it's a – guy, I don't even remember what the model is. It was orange and silver and had that little round pad on it. The little zone one.
It was a little Boss one, isn't it?
No, it was a Roland.
Oh, wow.
It's the DJ DC something or another, you know. But I have it in a box inside of a box. So
I like the little one that used to be silver and you couldn't play it, but you can program like each. It was like all nested with the little notes, and you had to like step sequence it.
Yep.
That was Boss, wasn't that Boss?
I think it was Roland. They have different sizes.
Well, like the TO-303?
Yeah.
Yeah, I used to – like the bass machine there as well.
Yeah.
Along those lines.
And you can link them together. So
that's
you get
right.
There's nobody giving those away free now. Those things are in demand.
Those are in demand. Well, this is – It's a nice little drum machine, but I'll tell you more about it down our next podcast. But anyhow, check our MySpace page because we are going to start listing some of the equipment. And guys, if you want to clean out your closets, you know.
This is the way to do it.
This is the way to do it. So anyhow, the other thing I want to tell you was, speaking of David, and I wanted to read his email. He actually sent us an email on – he answered the question, what is mixing?
Is this the same DMP7, David?
Yeah, that's why I purposely wanted to – bring this up because we have to get David his DMP.
Yes, he's earning it. He's earning it big time.
He's earning it big time. But, you know, we're giving away free gear. We didn't say in a timely manner, but we're giving
away. If I hadn't been pulled out of town for a few weeks, he'd have it already.
I know.
But he's getting it soon.
He's getting it soon. But anyhow, we asked the question, what is mixing? And in our last podcast, we talked about it. And actually, Andrew, before I read David's, what is mixing?
No, I'm going to go after.
Okay. I'll let you go after. He his first mixing is like rubbing two sticks of wood together until it heats up and you get flame.
Ooh. Very artistic, that is. That's a bit like Keats or something.
Mixing is the process in which you turn the sound of scraping metal and fingernails on a chalkboard into the next Britney Spears hit. A little more profound. And then the next one is literally like 500 words, and I'm just not going to read it.
What's the gist of it? Is there a general theme?
It's basically it takes you on a verbal story, and at the very end, yeah.
Good enough.
You know what? I'm going to copy this, and I'll put it on the MySpace.
Cool.
And that way people can
read it. It's metaphoric.
It's metaphoric.
Although – the first idea I think we should take literally next time you go into the studio, just
get
start a little
sticks.
Fire under the console.
Yeah.
See how that goes.
Yeah.
All right. So if anybody else wants to email us short description on what – emphasis on short description on what mixing is, we'll also read it on the podcast. But Andrew, since you weren't here, what is mixing?
Wow. Well, I missed all of your – your
and they were very
input. I'm sure they were, and I haven't had a chance to listen yet.
Metaphors are
pretty much summed it up.
Pretty much summed it up.
All right. Well, God, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of all of the above, isn't it? I think the taking lots of things and making them something good to listen to, which was alluded to in one of those from the email. I mean, that's kind of the core of it. Is you're trying to come out the other end with something that anybody can listen to and get the point of why you recorded it in the first place. And it's whether it's a song or a symphony or a movie or whatever it is, it's to get the point across of what you're doing. It's not to have lots of bass or have lots of top end or use reverbs or delays. It's to just get across what it is that's been recorded, I would say, maybe.
To communicate in the best way possible.
It's like rubbing two sticks of. No, that's good. That is good.
I think that was good, yeah.
That is good.
He deserves to be in the panel with that.
That's right. Yeah. Okay, he can stay.
All right. So,
considering he's been too busy to be here because he's out mixing.
Yeah.
Well, you know.
Yeah. That's right. That's right. All the people that have worked with you too in the last couple months can stay.
All right.
Well, that's great. So I just want to remind people if they check our MySpace page, we're going to start giving some more gear away, and you can also send in your definition on what is mixing.
And thank you, David, for sending in your ideas. We love hearing from the listener.
Now, the next thing I want to do is talk to you guys about a topic that I've been doing some reading about in the news. I just wanted to get your opinion on this. Microsoft, I don't know if you know this, but probably since the last time we got together, they've released a new digital music player called the Zune. Is everybody familiar with it or at least heard it? Essentially, the Zune is – Andrew.
I didn't go,
Essentially, the Zune is – Microsoft's version of iPod, and it has its own store, and it has its own little media player, which are these – they come in different colors, and like the brown ones really being bashed, although it's
kind of – You could lick them too. They have different flavors.
Nice.
But you know, if you want to read a review of the Zune, you can go online and read the reviews. But the main thing is it's pretty similar to the iPod in that it has a store, and then you can put your content in it. Where it differs is the Zune also allows you to use Wi-Fi to share songs with people. So if I had a Zune and you had a Zune, you could send me a song like, hey, I just got this song. I can play it for – I think it's either three times or have it within 48 hours and play it. And then it'll no longer be available, but it'll – if I liked it, it'll tell you how to basically buy the song, which is kind of, you know, cool, I would imagine. That's one of the big things that they're touting. Although there's a big, big argument of whether or not that's even a great feature, because some people, they don't care if anybody's listening to them. They kind of have music as their own internal thing. And other people are saying, hey, it's a great way to meet chicks.
The Zune is an interesting design, but it is shackled with so many ridiculous digital rights management.
Oh, yeah.
Confusing issues that.
Well, for one thing, it doesn't play Windows Media. It's like
– yeah, that's brilliant.
They sucker in all these other manufacturers to put out a player, mm-hmm. you know, hey, you know, support Windows Media, support Windows Media.
Because we don't.
I know. And then they come out with their own. Well, anyhow, what I wanted to ask you guys about and talk about was – I don't know if you know this, but Universal Music Group struck a deal with Microsoft where they get a portion of every player that's sold. Mm-hmm. It's like a buck or something like that that's going to go to Universal Music Group. Now, the reason why that there's some controversy behind that is, number one, is it's now basically Universal Music Group getting money for doing absolutely nothing. They don't have to sell one piece of music before they get this money. They just get this money right off the top.
Because they agree to make their catalog available?
Exactly, because agreed to make their catalog available. But the other thing too that's really amazing is the fact that now they're getting in on the hardware side and kind of dictating this licensing on the hardware side of things, because they're going into the assumptions that, hey, these boxes are mainly for people who rip off music anyhow or mm-hmm. download pirated music, so they think they should get a cut. What I want to know is, number one, from your point of view, especially you, Martin, being a songwriter and making a living off of your songs.
You weren't supposed to wake Martin.
I know. No, but seriously, one thing that people are saying is the fact that there's no – it's not – at least with a piece of music, you can tie it directly, the royalties, straight into – the publisher or the artist that created the music. Here you're just basically given a record label a giant amount of cash, and how is it all going to work out? And as a songwriter, you think that's a good model to go by? Do you think that's a good precedent that they set, as far as it's almost like a tax on your hardware?
It's very difficult for me to comment on that, because, you know, I'm sort of grateful that all this software is coming out and that you're getting iTunes and iPod and Zune coming out, because, you know, in a lot of ways it's getting your music out there more than we've had in the past. You know, I'm sure as time goes on, you know, as you're talking about it now, Mike, some people are going to say this shouldn't happen, that shouldn't happen. As a songwriter, you know, I feel like it's moving at such a speed that you know, you have to sit down and study it for a while and see what the benefits are and what the benefits aren't. And to tell you the truth, I don't really know the benefits of what, you know, Zune is over iTunes. I just know that I'm about to put an album out, and even with iTunes, you know, there's a lot of bands that won't go on to iTunes because they want their music to be, you know, able to be passed on. And, of course, with iTunes, you're not able to do that. So, you know, you see a lot of bands, even like we were talking about the Beatles, they're not involved because it's very hard to manage digital, you know,
although
output.
They're going to be coming out.
Are they?
Yeah, they're going to be coming out. Apple, and that Apple they finally made up, and they're going to be playing together.
The Zune thing is very, very new to me, and I've just heard a lot of people complaining about it. And at first, the response I got from people was, this is exciting, it's going to be much better than the iPod. And then a month later, I was talking to people, and they're going, no, it's not as good. It's like Rob was saying, there's a lot of problems with it. As a songwriter, I don't feel as yet I can really comment on how good it's going to be for us or not. My first thoughts are, because I'm putting an album out and everything's on the internet, is like, isn't this wonderful? We're hitting so many different places so rapidly. And I, you know, it's to me, in the long run, I'd have to say, in a very ignorant way, it feels to me like another way to get your music out there. And I'm sure, you know, as time goes on, as we've always done, we'll find out what's good about it and what's bad about it. At the moment, it seems quite a positive step to me.
You know, I think actually, from a business standpoint, I think it's actually kind of brilliant. And let me tell you why. Because what happens is, right now, there's a gluttony of players and formats out there, whether it's Verizon's new player phone or – and what happens is the consumer gets bombarded by technical noise. They don't know what to do. There's all this stuff out there. And reality is, whether it be gaming, whether it be music boxes, hardware doesn't do anything if you don't have the content there. So it's all based on content, and then based on that content, you can decide what hardware to buy. So I think it's great that they basically got content available to them, and they subsidized it, such as when you look at Xbox and PS3, they lose money on every machine made because they're going to make money on the content. So when they come out with a piece of hardware and there's no content for it, why would you ever want to buy it? But if they all of a sudden create incentives for content providers to start making material for that hardware, then all of a sudden they become another potential candidate.
But the incentive is the fact that record companies are losing a tremendous amount of money because they are no longer selling the actual physical CDs. So the incentive is that the record label, Universal, should want to be in the Zune marketplace without Zune having to pay them money, because what's going
to
happen?
They need to be in Verizon. They need to be in Zune. They need to be in PAL. In other words, now all of a sudden they have an incentive for Zune to succeed, because if Zune succeeds, Universal makes money, which means they're going to help promote their artists, maybe exclusivity, that the album for Mariah Carey may come out first on Zune before it comes out for Verizon. It's a whole new paradigm in the music business now.
But you know what? I don't think consumers like buying a product that just comes with a whole bunch of rules. And the Zune just feels like...
But the video game market's been doing it. We can only do this video game on PS3 or that on Xbox. We've been living with that for years.
But that's a format thing. I mean, that's one...
That's a video game and not a song.
One can't play the other. I mean, it's different code.
Well, no, I mean, the music will eventually come out for that, but it might not come out for a month.
What's going to happen with the music is all this digital rights management stuff is going to get so complicated that someone's going to figure out a way to make money without it. And it's going to go away because you can't sell a cute, sexy little product that's like an iPod and then have a giant rule book. And you can share the song with your friend one time, but if you share it a second time, you know, something else is going to happen. It's too complicated.
Well, I think that there are two issues. I mean, one is, first of all, did anyone hear what Universal is doing with that dollar? Is that then being shared back to anybody, or that's just to subsidize them doing the conversions?
Okay, good thing you asked, because from what I've read, they have said that they were going to split it with the artists, but haven't heard much more details.
Well, because which artists?
Exactly. Yeah. That's
every
what I'm saying.
Every artist gets a penny?
Although,
or tenth of a penny? A thousandth of a penny?
I read a really good website called Create Digital Music, and they have a great article on this if anybody wants to go to createdigitalmusic.com and read some more on this whole issue that we're talking about. But the author said that a really good thing to do would be to take the money and, you know, give it away to some of the nonprofits that promote music in schools and things like that. And I don't know.
I don't think they can do that until the music industry gets back on its feet.
Yeah.
Put me straight on this. Is it – with this Zune, is it just all Universal Music?
No. Well, basically Zune, they have their own marketplace and you can buy – it's just like iTunes and you can buy different music. What we're talking about – we're not talking about selling the music or the royalties of that. We're talking that Microsoft is paying one particular label a buck for every player, which, you know, ultimately that cost is going to get passed on to you and me if you're going to get a Zune.
Is it cheaper than the iPod, this unit?
No, it's actually the same price. Mm-hmm. So it's not.
Well, I was just going to go back to where I was thinking. So first of all, every other label now will purposefully not treat the Zune as a first tier place to get their music out to, because they are not making a dollar with each sale. So therefore, you have a disincentive for everything that is not Universal. And that will come up because they're all petty. All the labels are petty because they're losing so much money. And I think Rob's dead on with the digital rights management, because the consumer, first of all, music is free, right, as far as any consumer is concerned, because it has been for the last 10 years now. So music is free. There are ways to pay for it, and the iTunes Store is a perfect example that you can make money selling it. But any management will be cracked within minutes, especially if it's Windows.
Anybody who wants to share that stuff can share.
I mean, one of the reasons it took so long to crack the rights management on the iPod is because it was Apple-based.
Right.
And, you know, hackers don't use Macs. They hate Macs. But the Windows stuff gets cracked immediately, it seems, before it even hits the marketplace.
Well, actually, the funny thing is I read that they already have a crack for the whole sharing thing. But,
yeah.
you know, I just think, you know, you look at the iPod, and one of the reasons that the iPod works is, A, that the songs are a buck a piece, and B, it's really easy, you know, to buy from their store, and their players are great. And
Microsoft comes out with competition that's not as easy and comes with a bunch of rules and that isn't compatible with the iTunes store, which is what everybody thinks of as the de facto standard right now.
And you know what they did? Their pricing scheme is you can't actually pay for a song, you know, with your credit card and pay for a song. What you have to do is you have to buy like Zune points. And then many points are – each track costs so many points because they do this variable pricing thing. And I think that's one of the brilliant things about Apple and the iPod is Steve Jobs has said, you know, keep it easy, keep it simple.
Yeah.
It's consistent and people are going to buy it. And quite frankly, I got a $50 card for iTunes and I said, you know what? I'm going to go and try this iTunes thing out because, you know me, I was a really big go to the record store. I like to look at everything. And can I tell you, I had a really good time spending $50 on iTunes. That's, you know, 50 songs and you can pick and choose. And I bought like the new Snow Patrol album and just I was like, man, you know, I felt like I came out of the dark ages.
But the question is, you then have your hard drive hooked up to your stereo?
No, I've got my iPod right now here with me, with all my
music. Or not compressed?
Well, it's the AAC, and can I tell the AAC is it really blew me away of how good it is. I mean, it's not 100% as good as the CD, but it's pretty dang good. It really is, especially when you burn it back to a CD. As a matter of fact, Martin, I bought your album.
Good man.
Well, I'm working on a project with Martin, so I needed some of his songs and couldn't find my CD. I couldn't find any of my CDs because they're somewhere.
The quality was good.
And yeah, and I bought it, I downloaded it, and I burned it on a CD. The quality was just – I was just amazed. And
the thing you're saying about the way the Zune deals with points too, I heard a description of how it works, and it seems sort of on the surface like you're getting the music cheaper, and I think it does end up working out.
Well, some songs are cheaper than other songs.
On average, I think it could end up being that it ends up a little bit cheaper. It was a little confusing. But just as soon as you try to do that, it's like a carnival mentality, like you're going to buy tickets on the way into the carnival and then spend them on different rides or whatever. It just seems complicated, and why can't Microsoft just do something as simple and elegant and artistic as Apple does?
I think that's the hard – what you're just saying is it proves the point is that Apple is so simple, so they're looking for different ways to make people go, oh, this is interesting.
But if you look at the operating system, it's what – I mean, just look at where they start.
Yeah, but it's not just that Apple's doing it simple. Apple's doing it the way you would expect. Mm-hmm. When you go into a record store, you know, generally singles used to cost a certain amount.
Sure.
That's what the customer expects. What Microsoft is doing is adding complexity that no one would have dreamed of. Why don't they make it where you don't buy a whole song? Why don't they make it where you just buy verses and choruses and bridges?
Well, I think
if you love the chorus to the song, why pay for the verse?
I think they're doing it just because it has to be different. So they look like they're different in the marketplace. Yeah. More complicated,
well,
sure.
And that but always maybe, but ends up failing.
Sure, sure.
When you're different and worse, that's never a good thing.
Well, all I know is I have, you know, my 13-year-old daughter, I asked her what she wanted for Christmas. She goes, I want a $25 iTunes card. So it's like, it's a whole different paradigm, you know? She likes going on iTunes and shopping for music. So,
by the way, I have heard the Zune player, if you take away all of this ridiculous baggage, it's actually technologically great. But that doesn't matter as much as, you know, the content
the
and how
better?
You get it.
Is the sound better?
I don't know if the sound is better, but just the technology of
it. So what happens is the technicians had a really great idea. They built it. Then Laura's got involved and said, okay, but you need this layer of crap
That's
on
right.
it.
Well, you know what? What's going to happen is this. The Zune hardware is going to get hacked. They're going to put a Linux on it. And next thing you know, you're going to have a really cool little
probably already happened.
All right. Well, hey, we're going to take a break right now. And when we come back, we're going to be doing a little holiday special. We're going to answer some questions from the viewers, and we're going to give
some
advice.
They're listeners. They're not viewers.
God. guy. Why do I keep saying that?
Well, you just have this image of a lot of people
staring at the computer. Actually, they are viewing at the
computer. Yeah, that's right.
Staring at the screen.
We're going to be doing a gift guide for our
tasters,
four listeners. David and Wes. All right. We'll see you on the other side.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the LA area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And right now, since this is our holiday show.
Too many Jews here to call it a Christmas
That's
show.
That's right. So we'll say holiday show.
Holiday.
I want to. I had a listener email us and ask for some gift suggestions. And so I thought that would be a really good idea if we all just kind of put our head together and thought of some ideas for gifts under $300 and gifts above $300. And we're going to break it up into some categories like sound designer. Scott.
Okay. I'm ready.
For a young sound designer, what would be a really good gift if, like, your kid wanted to, like, do sound effects for the movies for, like, under $300?
For under $300, what I would do is take them to a swap meet with $300 in cash, bang things around, listen to all things that make really cool sounds, and buy them. I know this sounds weird. In reality, I mean, there's not –
That's a good idea.
But there's really nothing you can buy for under $300. That's – you know, I see a lot of websites going, you know, I got $400. I need a professional mic. What do you recommend?
Well, what about like
– get more money.
Like a simple like SoundForge to do sound editing.
You need
something.
A computer for it.
Okay. Well, let's say they had a computer.
Okay. You know what? A lot of the software – I mean, there's plugins. There's a lot of software, but a lot of it's in the $400 to $500 range sometimes. And I mean, you look at some of the bundles. I mean,
should we make
lot...
this 300 pounds?
I think buy a car.
That'd make it easier.
That's right. Well, we also have the over 300, so you know,
that'd
you can
be
go
easier.
For
yeah. But no, I think actually though, in if you really want to become a sound designer, actually buy crap. Listen to things like it's interesting. I was sitting at home the other day, and it's been a while since I've just sat at home and done nothing. And I was listening to the scanner in my, you know, in the office, and starting to listen to the air conditioner kickstart, and all of a sudden, and I'm like listening to this house. I'm going, oh, I got to record this. And it's amazing how much stuff is around you, and actually, some of the coolest things you could buy are at swap meets, and you bang things together, and we have Zoob tubes and weird kind of things that – even for music, things that you can bang together, then you manipulate those sounds, and all of a sudden it's like nothing you've ever heard. So – or Home Depot.
That's a good suggestion. Also, you know, you can probably get a microtrack recorder for $300 if you –
I think they're a little –
well, they're $349, but if you if you, you know, twist some arms.
Yeah, but then the comeback flash card costs you another $100, $200 and it gets you to $5.
All right. Let me think. Rob, gift idea. Someone wants to be a –
DMP7.
You know, musician.
You can get 1,000 of those for $300.
Under $300. Any good gift suggestions?
I always like just getting $300 bills. That's always a good gift. I would say there are a few gadgets that I've gotten as gifts or given as gifts over the years that aren't that expensive that end up being really useful, like things like those little USB key drives, you know, just little USB – they're not really hard drives, just USB memory cards.
Right.
Those are really handy. And the first one of those I ever got was a gift someone gave me. It was just a keychain with one of those on it. That was super useful. Voice recorder, like as a songwriter or producer, it's great to have an easy way to put down an idea, or to just record an idea instead of calling your voicemail, or that's the way most people do it now. But if you're just out in the middle of nowhere and you want to record an idea, it's nice to have a little voice recorder, and a lot of them can then synchronize with the computer.
Right.
To store your ideas along with your MIDI files or however you store them. That's I think I saw – I've seen really cool voice recorders for $100, $150.
Well, that's cool. You know, one thing that I saw over at the studio you work at is the little green bullet mic with that little amp that you showed me.
Oh, yeah.
That's cigarette amp.
That little cigarette amp. Boy.
Don't steal my ideas.
That was – I will give credit where credit is due. That idea is one that Andrew got from me. No, it's not. Andrew told me about that a long time ago. Which mic is that?
It's the harmonica. Green
Bullet. Yeah, the Green Bullet harmonica mic, right?
Sure. And then also the Zinke amps. They used to make them in cigarette boxes. I don't know if they actually still do.
I think they do still.
You can find them online. Just look for Zinke amps.
I think we're in the Flex boxes.
It's an amp with a speaker built into a cigarette box that takes a 9-volt battery. And you can drive a cabinet or use its own speaker, plug anything into it. It will be distorted. It sounds great.
It does. It really sounds great. And they're not that expensive. How much were they? They're like
under $100.
Yeah, $50, $70.
So what I want everybody to do is I want everyone with AltaVerb to take impulse responses of this thing and then log in.
Hey, you know what? The thing cost the amp itself is like $30 or something. It's really cheap.
Yeah, it's definitely under $50. I don't remember how much.
Yeah, very cool things. But little gadgets like that, there are plenty available. I mean, if you just think about the process of writing a song or recording a song, so much of the creativity happens when you're not in the studio, when you're formulating the ideas to go into the studio. And that's why any way to carry data around or ideas around, even if it's a really cool notepad, you know, like I forget what they're called, those like executive legal pads inside a leather folder or whatever.
Like
those
a Franklin things. Or a Day Runner.
Yeah, that kind of thing. Those are always useful.
You know, just as a sidebar, I always buy a Franklin and I want to get the latest and greatest because I think it's going to organize my life. Mm-hmm. And then I never use them because after a while, after being such, you know, you're on the computer all the time, mm-hmm. to actually go and start writing stuff and having to go back to your computer.
But if you're in an artistic mode where you're trying to mess around with lyrics or.
Yeah, no, you're right. Like you're right. It's a flaw.
It's a cool gift.
Flaw myself.
I mean, under 300.
Martin, as a songwriter, like what would be a really inexpensive thing if you had a friend who wanted to start off? And
you know, I think a lot of what Rob was saying, you know, because Rob's talking really from a musician's and a songwriter's place, for under $300, I think, you know, the way you record yourself quickly is, you know, although I've got a full-size Pro Tool setup, I went looking for a cassette recorder for the longest time because I needed something that I could fire something down on straight away, whether it was a lyrical idea, whether it was a guitar idea, and play it straight back without even these digital recorders where you had to download it and you had to, you know, go through some processes. I wanted something very quick to get feedback from. So to me, a cassette recorder is, if we're talking about under $300, depends what kind of song, you know, where the songwriter is in his career and what sort of standard he's at. But if a songwriter was just starting, you can go into Guitar Center and find pretty decent guitars for under $300, reasonable, and you can get the, you know, guys to work on them to get them into good intonation. And you can also buy like a keyboard that would possibly let you record some sounds down onto under $300. For me personally, you know, if I had $300 and even now, you know, people might say, "Yo, you've been accomplished for a while," I would say get a good small recorder that you can move around in your hands away from the Pro Tools, as Rob was saying, so that you can be anywhere and just speak into it for lyrics, pick up your guitar and play. So let's say, you know, a cassette recorder. I'd also say for some songwriters to look at songbooks. You know, if you've got a certain writer that you love, you know, whether it's Bob Dylan, whether it's the Beatles, I've always found that it's always good sometimes to buy a good songbook of the chords. Mm-hmm. And to look at that, because it's inspiring to see some of these great classic songs that you love and just to see how they were written and what the chord progressions were.
Like a textbook.
Except, yeah, I'm talking about an actual songbook with the chords in. I find that's very inspiring, especially for even now if I'm struggling. I think, oh, God, let me have a look at some of these classic songs. Let me have a look at Knocking on Heaven's Door and just look at the chord progression. And it vibes you up. So I think it's really useful for writers to inspire themselves. Under $300, look for things that inspire you. A cassette recorder, a songbook, maybe even a guitar that isn't the greatest guitar, but looks good, and so you just want to pick it up and strum it wildly. Because under $300, you can get some moments of inspiration.
I heard you in the break when we were discussing that we were going to discuss this. I thought I heard you say or mention headphones.
Yeah, I did.
Which I think, that's why I didn't mention them. I didn't want to steal the thunder, but I thought that idea of yours is a great one because everybody likes a good pair of headphones.
Yeah.
And you can definitely get great headphones for under $300. But headphones are.
I also have
really
this. We were talking about it earlier. You know, an iPod is I find really inspiring.
And then you can download our podcast and you can listen to it all the time.
Well, and 6 months from now, you're going to be able to get used Zooms really cheap.
But you know, it's all about inspiration. So if you know with your iPod that you can get under $300, you can put some of your classic songs on there and they inspire you to write. So that's another way of inspiration.
Speaking of headphones, have you heard the new Bose headphones?
Yeah, I got some.
The smaller ones? Ones?
Yeah, they're great.
The cancellation ones?
No, well, the noise cancellation ones are really incredible, but they have these new – the other ones used to cover your ears, and now these are just on your ear, but they sound – I was really amazed. I mean, they eased off the bass just a tad, so it's not so bass heavy. And it's the triport.
They're great to go, jogging with and walking with, because as soon as you hit traffic, you can't really hear the traffic, which you can through the buds. They're cool for that. They're very cool.
It's funny. I was doing some music last night, and I had my little noise-canceling headphones on. So I'm sitting there playing guitar, and I'm in my studio doing stuff, and haven't done that in a while, so it was really kind of fun. My wife comes down and goes, "Oh, my God, did you hear that?" And I'm like, "Was I playing too loud?" She goes, "Did you hear the crash?" And I went, I can't hear actually anything, and I didn't. And I some picture on the other part of the house just fell and crashed, and I never heard it.
Hey, Andrew, what would gift would you give somebody, or would you want under $300 for somebody who wants to be an engineer?
The bullet mic and the cigarette amp, really good. Those are still good. Mm-hmm. They were good 5 minutes ago. They're good now. They're recording the Beatles book. It's like the songbooks for a songwriter. It is really inspirational. The book is huge and beautiful as well. And it's just every piece of gear they used on those albums. And most engineers at least have heard the Beatles records enough that they can look through this and see what was used. And it's really inspiring.
Does that book actually say the pieces that were used on particular songs?
No, it's not. There's a book called The Beatles Sessions, more of a day-to-day, this is what we did on this day with this. Gotcha. And sometimes it lists the equipment. This is more here are all the microphones that were used and descriptions of all of the different Coles ribbon mics and all the 47s and the 67s and things like that. Mm-hmm. But then there's also a chapter on ADT, the automatic double tracking, which was supposedly developed by EMI, but it's basically using a slap machine, and then the tape operator would sit there with the VSO and speed it up and slow it down, and they would use that as an effect mostly on vocals so that they wouldn't have to double a vocal. It emulated having a doubled vocal, and just pages and pages on that, and then this huge poster of the TG console.
Great.
And so... Nice. It's pretty cool.
This has just come out, has it, this point?
Yeah, it came out in end of September, early October, I think. Wow. So,
I got to pick that up because that sounds really good.
Yeah, it's really good.
Okay, my gift suggestion for a gift under $300, if you have anybody, your son, your brother, anybody who wants to get into music, I think a really valuable resource is magazines. Get them a magazine subscription.
Playboy.
No, I'm talking to
For the interviews.
That's right.
Musicians and bonding.
Electronic musician, keyboard, EQ, computer music, future music. Any of those magazines are just they're really worth 10 times what you pay. As far
and you
as
keep
the
them, don't you? That's what's the great thing about them. You keep them like a library,
especially like the reviews, because you may find a piece of gear and you read a review and you just are jonesing for that piece of gear. But it's just too dang expensive. Yeah. I guarantee you, you'll pull that issue out in a year, and that piece of gear has been, you can find on eBay for a quarter of the cost.
Well, I actually keep all of the buyer's guides. So I've got stuff back to from 80, 81. Wow. So I remember seeing, the Rhodes Chroma.
Right.
And the Prophets and all these keyboards. I'm like, oh, my God. You looked at those, and you couldn't afford it now, you know.
Yeah, and the English magazines like Computer Music, you get software. They have a whole free free suite of plugins of VSTs. They have a whole thing, literally the sequencer and plugins and the sampler. It's all free, and you get tons of samples. So that's a really good place to start, and it's really inexpensive, and you can start for under $50 and get somebody a great gift. So get them magazines. You can't go wrong. Okay, now we're going to raise the bar a little bit. Over $300. Gift idea, what would you like? What would you give somebody over $300? Let's start with you, Scott.
Oh, okay.
Sky's the limit.
A Lamborghini. No, no, I mean, for post-production, I think that without getting too crazy, I would probably get a Mac laptop with a Pro Tools interface. And, you know, that's something you can get into, whether it's a Pro Tools Lite or they have the new Pro Tools Ultra Cheap. I think that whether you like it or not, I think Pro Tools is the standard in post-production. You have to know it. And it's really good because I think that it gives you a good idea of consoles, and there's a lot of, and then go through every plugin and demo it, and then check it all out because you can do that and it's free. So that's what I would do, and then acquire plugins as you go, and if you're starting off, you know, I think it's a good way to go.
Okay, Rob.
Well, so there's no price limit?
No.
I would just probably get a giant case full of headphones and digital voice recorders. Like 50 of each.
That's no. Stupid.
But it got a laugh. No, actually, let's see, trying to be creative here, because there's all the typical obvious stuff, you know, buy the coolest console and the coolest tape machine and the coolest Pro Tools. I would say for a musician, I would say find the most unbelievably great teacher you can find and get lessons with that person.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Ooh.
I don't think there's
any piece of gear as important as that.
Wow. Wow.
And as a thanks, you can give him a giant box of headphones. But no, that's really what I would want. If there was money was no object, that's what I'd go for.
All right. It's a boring answer from me, but you know, ever since I was a songwriter, you're always looking for something to record onto. So for me, if the bar was over $300, I'd be looking at a good sequencer, something that was simplistic to me as a writer. So, you know, whether it's a Pro Tools LE system, obviously, you know, I'd be looking for a sequencer that was songwriter friendly. I mean, that's the first thing we ever think about when we start to write a song. You go, okay, I've got a bit of a song, I've got to put it down somewhere. So I'd be looking at a good sequencer. I know it's a boring answer, but you'd want to, you know, you want a tape recorder of some sort in your very near to you when you're writing.
Mm-hmm. Andrew?
Along those lines, I think a good microphone, because everybody's doing music at home, and that's not going to change, and you're not going to turn your home into an amazing sounding room. So the next best thing you can do is have a really great microphone. And I'm not even going to suggest one in particular. There are a lot of them.
Right.
But it's the first line of turning what's going on acoustically in a room into bits.
Actually, it's two things, isn't it, really, what Andrew was saying. You get a good sequencer with a good microphone and you know, where you can record yourself and get, you know, use a good mic.
What's one of your favorite inexpensive mics?
Favorite inexpensive? We're back to inexpensive.
No, because I could say favorite expensive. And
okay, I think one of my favorite
– or just favorite
well, one
mic.
Of my favorite utility mics, which go. I could use on anything, would be an AKG 414.
Yeah,
and not even the TL2 because that has the C12 type capsule, which is better in a lot of applications, but it's also more specific. They also make a ULS, which is cheaper. And it's a more linear frequency response. And you can put it on anything. It's multi-pattern. So you can mess around with figure eight. You can mess around with Omni. And it's great.
Wow, that's great. Well, my piece of advice, my gift, if you're – and this is going to seem like a shameless plug, but really, I like the API, the A to D. The A to D is such a great buy because you get two mic pre's plus the analog to digital – converter. It's I've been
how
using
much
it.
Does that cost? How can we get it?
And where can you ever find it to buy?
I know.
Who would sell such an item?
You know what? I know you guys. It's a
shameless plug. Oh, look, there's one in the corner.
No, but seriously, I've been doing some recording I've been doing some recording with it on the laptop, and you use the you know, the preamps, and you record it into your system, come in SPDIF, and then when you're done, you just do your mixing, and you come back in, you go your A to D, and you bounce it back in digitally. It's just such a great bang for the buck to get the two mic pre's, and then to also get the analog to digital converter. It's a good buy. So, you know, that's all I'm going
to
say. But
how do they reach you to buy it?
But you know, actually, in jumping to what Andrew said, not to get off the API thing. No, but you know what? Actually, when I think about, because I do my end of the year purchases, you know, it's, and I have to admit, actually, every year I buy microphones. So it's actually, it's very cool. And I totally agree on that side, even for post production, especially for sound designers, because, you know, you go out, you get your 744, what the latest recorder is, and then you get all these different kind of mics. And one of the mics, actually, have you played with the DPA? The 130 volt?
No, I've heard about it. I haven't used it.
It's something we've started using, and I hear it's pretty amazing. Because it usually, like the 4007 is the kind of equivalent, but it's not as much voltage. But you kind of need a little kick to hear it, something louder. This one can do 145 decibels, but not only that, it can also hear very fine, minute sounds. And we just picked up two of them, and we're pretty excited about it.
I've got to ask a question here from an ignorant place. We're talking about good microphones, but how important would you say, Andrew, was the system that the mic's going into, the preamp?
Well, it's all as important as everything. I mean, to me, the room is more important than the microphone or the preamp. I mean, and the source of the sound is even more important than the room. So you get a good instrument with someone playing it who's good in a good-sounding room, then obviously the first thing is to have a good microphone. But, yeah, it's weakest link in the chain. I mean, if you've got a horrible mic pre, it doesn't really – I mean, the good mic will sound better than the bad mic, but you're still hampered. So, yeah, to have a good – I mean, if we're going way over $300, to get a good recording chain, a single pre with a single EQ, whether it's an old Neve or a new API or whatever it is, that absolutely.
Also, for anybody who's going to have maybe only one mic or very few mics, it's important to make sure you get something as versatile as possible. There are a lot of options for that, but there are also specialty mics, and you probably want to steer away from a mic that only sounds good, you know, for one.
But that said,
414 is
But that 414 said, if you're a vocalist, you should find a good vocal mic. Forget about the rest of it. I think.
Well, if that's all you're going to record.
I mean, there are certain times where I think it's okay to be really specific about the microphone if it's for you, because there's nothing better than a singer who shows up at a session knowing exactly what microphone sounds good on him in a certain range, and is open to try other stuff. But usually, they're right.
Right.
And I'll say one thing on the inexpensive, going back to the 300s,
right.
$300 under. If you want to look at microphones, I know we have a very specific purpose, but we bought a bunch of MXLs. They're like $100, and one's like an 87, the other one's like a little.
Right.
And what's great is we shoot at them. And so this way, if we, you know, blow up a mic or shoot a mic, it costs us $50. Who cares? But there's a lot of BWS electronics, MXL.
You asking people to do that at home with? You know, you're asking them
to shoot at their microphone. Right.
Well, no, Christmas? You know, happy holidays. but we did on a recording shoot, we lined up six MXL microphones, and we're trying to get bullet buys, you know, 200 yards down, and, you know, occasionally we'd miss and hit the mic, and, yeah, that's $50.
I'm sure MXL would be thrilled.
Well, a couple other just really cheap, great microphones, which I think would be under $300.
Yeah.
The Shure SM7
can be
a great vocal mic, as well as snare drum or guitars or whatever. And also Heil has a line of dynamic microphones that sound amazing.
Mm-hmm.
The PR – I think they started off as broadcast mics and use them on anything, PR 20, 30, and 40. And they're really cheap and really great.
Hey, have you used any of the inexpensive ribbon microphones? Have you had any
inexpensive experience? Ribbon microphones?
Yeah, they have these inexpensive they're made over in China ribbon microphones that some manufacturers are now selling.
The stuff that's coming from China is actually pretty amazing, that some of the quality – it's not quite as good as some of the German mics, but pretty darn close.
Yeah, I've been just reading some different things about them, and they're getting kind of good reviews. So I was just wondering if anybody here has worked with any of the mics.
We've used Royers a lot, but they're way over.
I mean, I've never used a Ribbon microphone, so because generally they've been out of my price range. So I don't. I would love to try to start, you know, micing different things with a Ribbon microphone. But
I mean, we found Ribbon microphones. I mean, they're great for certain applications, right. and Royer kind of took over the universe for a little while. It was the hot Ribbon mic, and still a lot of people use them on.
It used to be Beyer, then it became Royer, and now I don't know who it is.
Yeah, because don't they make a stereo Ribbon microphone?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, they do. Well, it just kind of looks like two Ribbon microphones.
Yeah, on top just of two ribbons. Yeah.
But those aren't generally well, they're not that cheap, and also they're not as general purpose. So if someone doesn't have already a bunch of the more utilitarian mics, you probably wouldn't just get that.
Right.
Unless, you know, if you're an electric guitar player who needs that sound, miking an amp, or we have a trumpet player that we work with a lot who swears by the Royer ribbon. You know, then it does pay to get that one specific mic. But I think for most people who would be looking for, you know, a starter mic to be sort of general purpose, you wouldn't get something with such a specific sound.
What was that microphone mic you had at my house you were recording the acoustic guitar on with the two stereo?
Oh, that was the Rode stereo mic.
That was quite a good vibe. It wasn't very expensive.
No, that was – you could probably pick those up for like $350 now. I mean,
it was quite impressive.
Maybe $450.
Certainly on acoustic guitar.
Yeah, it was impressive. Really good. We were using a stereo microphone and I was recording Martin, and you could pick up the tone of the guitar, you know, since it's stereo in the way it's pointing, and you can also pick up the fretboard, and it really makes a nice
guitar. It was a good bass response.
I mean, to talk about microphones in the hundreds of dollars is amazing because it was easily in the thousands of dollars.
Yeah, you didn't used to be able to have this conversation.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's like $350 going, yeah, it's kind of expensive, but it's like, I'm used to mics that are $4,000 or $5,000.
But at the same time, the ones that are up there, there's a reason
for it. Absolutely, absolutely.
So if you can, maybe you save your $300 and you rent amazing microphones for a few days if you're recording something.
Yeah.
That's a good point. That's true. Well, hey, listen, you know what? We're out of time, so we're going to save some more of these questions till the next time.
Now, is that
100%?
That's sleigh bells.
Is that sleigh bells or is that Friday the 13th?
Sleigh bells meet crickets.
Okay.
But anyhow, I want to remind everybody that we are going to be giving away some free gear, so check the MySpace page. That's www.myspace.com/... Audio Nowcast.
And if they want to ask us questions, is it better to do it from the MySpace page or
they can do MySpace because we have like three friends, so we'd like more
actually,
friends.
Actually, didn't you have a question for me?
Yes, I did, but
– we ran out of time.
We'll do it next time. We'll do it next time because it's pretty good and I just don't want to rush anybody on this because it's actually really good. Andrew, welcome back.
Thanks.
And
great to be here.
Hopefully you can make the next show, the end of the year show. So that'll be kind of fun. And and I just remind everybody, if they want to ask us questions, they can always email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com, audio@nowcastnetwork.com. And guys, anybody else have anything else they want to add? Anything you want to say?
No, I'm amazed, actually, with how many gift ideas popped up.
I think it was great.
Huge number.
And you all are going to get one of each. All right, well, thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time. No, we'll listen. No, you'll hear us next time.
Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com. Thanks for listening to this week's edition of the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by West Wave Audio.